Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine, former congressional attorney, bringing you all the news from Washington, D.C. that the government does not want you to know, and that the mainstream media has trouble getting around to reporting. The topic of today's show is how do you solve a problem like Scalia? And it's actually going to be the Inside Scoop's first and possibly last musical. Well, I don't know if it'll be much of a musical, but I have been cajoled into actually singing the title line and a little phrase with it. So you may want to run now and hide your head before I continue. But the subject, while the song is perhaps not serious, the subject, of course, is very serious. I've called Justice Scalia one of my four horsemen of the apocalypse, one of the four evil geniuses running this country. The other three, of course, are Karl Rove, Dick Cheney, and Tom DeLay. Can't include our president because he's not that smart and he's not really running the country. But these four men are, and Justice Scalia in many ways is controlling the judicial branch. And he's also appearing in the news a lot lately. Of course, he chose our president in the infamous opinion of Gore v. Bush, which we will talk about in detail, where he disregarded the Constitution and the law in order to get his guy to be president. But it's not just that. Whether we come to the big fight over whether Justice Scalia would recuse himself when the issue of Cheney's secret energy commission came before the Supreme Court. And there's the stories of him duck hunting with Vice President Cheney but refusing to remove himself. Or when it comes simply to examples of religious freedom or pro-choice, abortion rights, gay civil rights, whatever it is, Scalia can always be trusted to be on the wrong side of logic and the wrong side of freedom. And yet, he consistently claims that he is indeed not a hypocrite. In fact, he claims to be a strict constructionist. Justice Scalia has the view that the Constitution means exactly what he says the founders say it meant, and it never changes, and all he's doing is being consistent. And what I want to talk about this hour is really your views on Justice Scalia, on what do you think the Supreme Court is doing in any of these areas. And also I thought I'd be able to share some of my Scalia stories. It just gives me, you know, this is Friday, you know, we'll kick back. It gives me an excuse to share some of my own personal run-ins with Justice Scalia that I had while in law school. And I'll give you some examples of how he's not exactly the most consistent guy in the world. So we'll talk about law, and I'll use my my legal background, which is eminently better than my singing background, to hopefully answer your questions and really take your challenges. If you disagree with me, if you love Antonin Scalia, and I know I've got a few conservative listeners out there, Ben, Ed, you know who you are. Call in. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, toll-free, 877-57-SCOOP on your dial, which is also 877-577-2667. Call in, challenge me, let's talk about what's going on in the Supreme Court. Or maybe you'll just call in to tell me to shut up and stop singing and not to give up my day job. And that would probably be the smartest and most rational challenge anyone had on the show. But that being said, my producer is cowering under the desk. My web streamer has her hands over her ears. Run, hide while you can, because you're actually, yes, going to hear me sing on the air for the first and quite possibly the last time. Are you ready? Because I'm nervous. I got to tell you, you know, I don't mind challenges from the right, from conservatives, challenges from the left. You know, I've argued with lots of people. I've had many guests on the air I disagree with. I'm not afraid of Barbara Comstock, the Department of Justice spokeswoman, or any of the Bush administration officials I've debated on the air. Singing on the radio, though, is scary. And maybe I'm just doing this to, I don't know, maybe because American Idol wouldn't accept me. But here we go. All right. This is hard to do. All right, let's go. How do you solve a problem like Scalia? How do you take a snake and stop its bite? How do you find a word that means Scalia? A strict constructionist, a hypocrite, a fright. Many a things you know you'd like to tell him. Many a things he ought to understand. But how do you make him stay and listen to all you say when tape recordings of what he says are banned? Oh, how do you solve a problem like Scalia? How do you get a Supreme Court justice canned? All right, that's it. No more singing for the rest of the hour. We'll go back to serious debate. But this way, if you wanted a song that you could hum along as you go around hating Justice Scalia and the Supreme Court, now you have one. Producer, you can come out from under the table. It's okay. Anyway, I do want to talk seriously about Justice Scalia and specifically about the Supreme Court. There's so many ways in which the Supreme Court has power over our lives that I don't think we realize. And there's so many of their doctrines that really make absolutely no sense whatsoever. You know, Republicans, conservatives used to complain for decades. In fact, some of them still complain, complete hypocrites, but they complain about the Warren Court, the court of Governor Earl Warren, later Chief Justice Earl Warren, who ruled a number of ways to protect our freedoms. It was his court that gave us the Miranda rights so that we know our rights when we're arrested by the police, that said we have a right to an attorney. And if we need one, if there's a criminal conviction against us, and even to have the state pay for the attorney if necessary. Earl Warren, of course, is also the great Chief Justice of Brown versus Board of Education, saying that blacks and whites could go to school together even if the majority in those southern states voted to keep them separate. This Brown versus Board of Education, of course, is the decision that conservatives most hated in the day, and that even Justice Rehnquist, Chief Justice Rehnquist, was very much opposed to. They said democracy should rule, and if the people want to rule that blacks are second-class citizens, that is the people's right. You find pretty much the same argument made today with regard to gay marriage. They say, how dare the Massachusetts Supreme Court use its constitution promising equality to say that gay people should have the same rights as straight people? That's not majority rule. Don't they know that in a majority rule, minorities have no rights? What people who say this obviously don't understand, or actually they do understand, they just pretend not to understand, is that our Constitution has always protected minority rights. Indeed, without the protection of minority rights, we wouldn't need a Constitution. We could be a pure democracy, and we could have the majority always prevail. But I think it shows respect for the founders, who I do respect, by the way, and I'm fully willing to discuss and admit all the problems with the founders, from Thomas Jefferson saying all men are created equal, not including women, to the fact that most of them owned slaves. There were many ways in which they did not have a lot of foresight, but they did have foresight in creating a document that could be amended with the times, that did have checks and balances to protect against tyrannies like the tyranny of the majority. And so I have a lot of respect for our founders. And in fact, I hope to discuss over the next hour sort of my vision of what the founders had in mind versus Scalia's vision, which, though he claims to be consistent, I hope to show you over the next hour that really he's a big hypocrite. But again, if you want to join in the discussion, I encourage you to do so. There's some important issues here. You can just tell me how badly I sing, or you can discuss the issues of the day before the Supreme Court. Talk about religious freedom. Talk about Gore v. Bush. Talk about whether Cheney should have recused himself from the Dick Cheney Energy Commission debate, the lawsuit coming up. And talk about really how the courts have been used in ways, for example, to go after President Clinton. The idea that Dick Cheney should have a private life when talking with energy commissioners about how to help oil companies with taxpayers' money, but Bill Clinton shouldn't have a private life with regard to private consensual sex acts, is really an amazing doctrine, and you really have to kind of twist yourself into knots and maybe stand on your head to even try to make sense of it. Kind of like what you'd have to do to understand the Gore v. Bush opinion, where Scalia penned the very famous words, "If we count the votes in Florida, that will cast a cloud upon the legitimacy of George Bush's claim to be president," which Stalin could not have written better. The idea that if you count the votes, it will damage the legitimacy of the person who will lose. Well, you know, and that Scalia was undoubtedly right. It's true that if you count the votes, the person who comes in second, it damages the legitimacy of their claim to be president. But some would think in a democracy that we actually have that right. Of course, Justice Scalia has said quite clearly the people of the United States have no right to choose the president of the United States. Did you know he said that? It's in the opinion, Bush v. Gore. They have no right to choose the president of the United States, and even the state legislatures don't have rights to make decisions, because the justices of the Supreme Court, at the end of the day, will decide who is president. Quite extreme. quite extreme, but then again, just about everything Justice Scalia does is extreme. And I want to talk about him. I want to compare him to the other justices on the court. And I want to talk about the issues of the day and how you think the Supreme Court should be involved or shouldn't be involved in protecting our freedoms. So again, I invite you to call in. We've got a good hour to discuss this. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Any issue you want to talk about that's in the courts, any issue with regarding Justice Scalia, this is your time. Even if you just want to call in and harass me for my lousy singing, this is your chance. 877-57-SCOOP or email me by sending an email to Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. And we'll be back with how do you solve a problem like Scalia right after these messages.
Notice that one of the Bushites' favorite words is robust. It implies vigor, action, power. It's a manly sort of word that they punch out of their mouths like a fist. They've been using the word a lot lately to buff up George's image as an unrelenting foe of terrorism who's battling every aspect of the global terrorist network. The president is robust in his commitment, they bark at anyone who dares question Bush's actions or inactions. Yet there's one aspect of battling terrorism that the Bushites have gotten downright wimpy about: tracking down the money that finances the global network. While George himself has talked big about rooting out the evildoers who put the money up for terrorist attacks, this is not an area that the big banks and some of our supposed allies really want to have deeply investigated. So Bush very quietly zeroed out a request by the IRS to increase by half the number of investigators it has to follow the money trail of terrorism. This is painstaking work that requires substantial staff with the expertise, time, and backing to do the job. But in his latest budget, which George hailed as evidence of his robust pursuit of the bad guys, there is zero funding for the 80 additional criminal investigators requested by the IRS. This would not have come to light at all, except that it was mentioned in one sentence on the last page of a routine report to an obscure congressional subcommittee by an even more obscure IRS oversight board. Bush's defunding of IRS's financial diggers was caught by one alert committee member, Representative Earl Pomeroy, who has since been directing some very robust questions to the White House. This is Jim Hightower saying, a Bush PR flack responded that the Treasury Department, of which the IRS is a part, got an overall budget increase, which she says demonstrates Bush's robust commitment to tracking terrorist money. But since that still doesn't get the IRS the agents it needs, I'd call that a robust dodge.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec, nah. Zantac for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. This is your host, Mark Levine, bringing you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. And if you were here during the last 15 minutes, I guess I owe you an apology. that was the first and probably last Inside Scoop musical rendition. The critics are in, and well, I'll just read two emails I received. There's Robbie in Dallas, Texas, who writes, "I so respect your views, education, and the information that you share, but that singing, oh my God, you had me almost crying. I was laughing so hard. Thanks for all the knowledge and now laughs that you share." Angel was a little more direct. Angel writes, the entire email is, "Please don't do that again," with a smiley face. Okay, Angel. All right, Robbie. We'll get on to the serious matters, because it is a serious matter. It really is. I want to try to explain where Antonin Scalia is coming from, and I have the added advantage of having seen the man talk to the man close up. There are no tape recordings of it, of course, because Justice Scalia does not allow anyone to tape record his speeches. That way, like Bush and Cheney, who also don't allow tape recordings when they testify before the 9/11 Commission, the whole point is that they can't be held accountable for what they say. And that's understandable. When you say things that are ridiculous, you don't want to be held accountable. And Scalia says things that are ridiculous all the time. Again, call in if you have a question about Justice Scalia or the Supreme Court or any of these cases or what scares you the most. Please join in. The number, you don't have to sing the song, though. If you want to, it will be allowed. In fact, probably your voice will be far better than mine. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. 877-57-SCOOP. It's toll-free, so you have no excuse not to call in and tell me how bad I did. I'm already worried that Simon from American Idol will be calling. I may not let that call through. But the rest of you, please call in. Let's talk about the Supreme Court. You know, the last time that I saw Justice Scalia personally, well, that's not true. I've actually appeared in a number of Supreme Court hearings and listened. In fact, I was there when the Supreme Court ruled in the Lawrence v. Texas decision, which we can also talk about, which finally held in 2003 that a state cannot make it a crime to have sex between private consenting adults. Yes, and Texas put two men in jail for having sex with each other in their own bedrooms. And finally in 2003, that was held not to be allowed, that was unconstitutional. I actually was there for that hearing. But I didn't get a chance to speak to Justice Scalia at that hearing. The last time I actually got a chance to speak with him and to hear him speak was way back in law school. I attended Yale Law School, and Justice Scalia came to speak to us. And, of course, at Yale Law School, like any of the better law schools in the country, most of the people there are liberal. I happen to believe that's because if you are a clear-thinking person, you tend to end up being on the liberal or democratic side of the aisle. I think a lot of conservatives like to really not think at all. They like to just sort of say, to believe whatever they're told to believe. There are exceptions. There are certainly some thinking conservatives. You just don't see them on the air very often. So if you're insulted by that, hey, call in, 877-57-SCOOP. But I want to tell you about when Justice Scalia spoke before us. And Justice Scalia at this time, which is now 10 years ago, was arguing that he indeed was a true strict constructionist. And what is a strict constructionist? A strict constructionist is someone who holds to the letter of the law, believes that exactly what the words say have meaning. You might call such a person a textualist. And if there's any question as to what they mean, you go and you look at the founders and you see what the founders thought. And conservatives like to decry liberals. They say, "Oh, liberals, they believe in anything. The Constitution means anything. And in fact, you can just find a right to abortion or find a right to have equal rights for blacks or for gays or for women. But it's nowhere in the text. And that's extreme and it's wrong. And liberals need to stop having activist judges." You may have even heard that line before, which would be really ironic because I would argue that the most activist judges pretty much in American history are the last 10 years under the conservative rule of Chief Justice Rehnquist as well as Antonin Scalia. But I want to tell you my story. I want to tell you about what happened when I attended a session with about a couple hundred law students or so, and Justice Scalia spoke to us. And he was in fine form that day. Justice Antonin Scalia was smiling. He was, whipping out his pocket constitution every chance he got and really having a great time. Of course, Justice Scalia doesn't allow, anything he says to be recorded. So he knew that what he had to say really wouldn't be a problem. But he was asked a question, for example, by somebody else, how does he feel about gun control? How does he feel about the Second Amendment? Does he feel that the Second Amendment really does allow people to have any types of arms that they choose? After all, you wouldn't want a person to have a nuclear weapon, a nuclear warhead, in their home. So Justice Scalia whips out his pocket constitution. I have one in front of me. I carry one around just like he does. And it says, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That's the entire text of the Second Amendment. Now, Scalia did not mention the militia part, which all of us know, any basic constitutional scholar will tell you that the whole purpose of the Second Amendment means we can't take guns away from a well-regulated militia. It protects the rights of states to have militias. That's really what it does. Scalia didn't make that argument. No, he read this part. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Shall, he says, shall. That's mandatory. When you say shall not be infringed, there's just no way out of it. It's mandatory. And what cannot be infringed? Well, Scalia said, it's the right of the people to keep and bear arms. What does bear mean? Well, in this context, we're not talking about a big hairy creature with claws. We're talking about carrying. When you bear arms, you are carrying arms. Can you carry a rifle? Scalia said yes. Can you carry a nuclear warhead? No, you can't. It's too heavy. Next question. Well, the room broke into laughter. Okay, here we have a justice actually taking the word strictly literally. Of course, it's an idiotic argument. You can bear anthrax. You can bear sarin. You can bear any manner of chemicals that can kill thousands of people that we outlaw. And in fact, you probably could bear a nuclear warhead if you carried it on some contraption of some sort. You can also bear assault rifles, which I certainly think we have a right to ban. And so obviously it's a stupid argument, but he made it. He got his laugh and people moved on. And they asked him all manner of questions about the Constitution. And he would say, well, you know, this means that the Latin word for this means that. And therefore it must mean that. And there was no question for Scalia. There was nothing ambiguous. Everything was absolutely sure that the words of the Constitution, free speech, you know, that any of these words had certain meanings for him. There were no questions, no ambiguity. Indeed, it was almost like, why have a judge interpret it at all? You could always have a computer. So I raised my hand and I asked him about the Ninth Amendment. I want to read to you the entire Ninth Amendment. It's a short amendment to the Constitution. The Ninth Amendment to the Constitution says, the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. That's the whole Ninth Amendment. It's not one that's often talked about. But the point of the Ninth Amendment, as I see it, is that the enumeration in the Constitution, in other words, the fact that you list certain rights in the Constitution, shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. In other words, just because we give you certain rights in the Constitution doesn't mean you don't have others. There may be all kinds of rights. There may be a woman's right not to have the government tell her what to do with her body. Abortion. There may be the right of people not to be invaded in their private homes by the police looking for some kind of deviant sex, such as the Lawrence v. Texas case. Of course, Scalia supports the right of throwing into jail people who have sex that he doesn't like. And indeed, in Virginia, my home state, until 2003, a man and his wife could not have oral sex because that was a crime. That was a crime that would lead, yes, to a prison sentence. And Scalia supports that. He supports very much putting people, or at least the right of states, if they want to pass laws to put people in jail for having private consensual sex acts. But in any case, I raised the Ninth Amendment because, to me, Ninth Amendment suggests there are a whole host of rights that are out there that people have. Well, I said to Scalia, what about the Ninth Amendment? Does it have any meaning? And he said, well, no, the Ninth Amendment really doesn't have any meaning at all. It's just a suggestion. It's a suggestion. It's a suggestion to legislatures, you know, be careful of people's rights. And I said, well, Justice Scalia, I realize you think it's just a suggestion, but this was an amendment to the Constitution. This wasn't like the preamble, which is Scalia's example, you know, where you say the very beginning of the Constitution, that the whole purpose, we the people of the United States, in order to form a perfect union, and you give all the examples. I said, well, you know what, it's not like the preamble. This was an amendment. This was a change of the Constitution. This is something that had to be ratified by Congress and the various state legislatures. Are you really saying that this has absolutely no meaning at all? Why amend a constitution with an amendment that's meaningless? That doesn't make any sense. And Justice Scalia said, well, and he whipped out his pocket constitution. He said, let's look at the differences in the amendments. And he goes through the First Amendment. Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion and so forth. And in Amendment 2, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And Amendment 3, no soldier shall be quartered in your home. And he said, now let's look at the Ninth Amendment. And he reads, the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed. I said, shall. I said, Justice Scalia, that's mandatory. I interrupted him. You know, you can do that when you're a law student. You can't really do that when you're a lawyer. He said, wait, let me finish. He said, shall not be construed to deny or disparage other rights retained by the people. So basically, Scalia said, look, all this is saying is he doesn't say what the rights are. So clearly, this is just a warning to legislatures, you know, be careful. Well, I said, Justice Scalia, now I'm not the Latin scholar that you are, but it says shall not be construed to, and I hope this isn't getting too technical for you, but basically the Ninth Amendment says that you can't, by naming rights, you can't construe them to stop others retained by the people. Now, who construes laws? I said. A legislature doesn't construe a law. A legislator makes laws. They abolish laws. They amend laws. They change laws. Who construes? To construe, I said, I'm not the Latin scholar you are, Justice Scalia, but to construe, that means to interpret. And who is supposed to interpret the laws but the courts? Doesn't the Ninth Amendment indeed restrict you? Restrict you, Justice Scalia. Restrict you in saying that you are not allowed to interpret any law to deny other rights retained by the people. Well, Scalia was not doing so well in this argument because people were cheering me, and hey, I was just a kid in law school. And so he started to get a little upset, and he said, well, but what could they possibly be? What, there are no rights enumerated. It's not clear. You know, what could it be? I said, well, wouldn't it at least be the same rights that we had back in the 1700s? Things like a man's home is his castle. The idea that you can't just have the government go in and invade your home, you know, unless they have a reason, unless there's some danger there. In other words, Justice Scalia, don't we have a right to privacy? At which point, Justice Scalia said, you've asked me enough questions, let me move on to someone else. And I'm very proud to say I got a standing ovation from my students in the room, from all the students, my fellow students there. And Justice Scalia would not, still has not, answered my question. So that's one of my Scalia stories. I've got other stories, but again, I want to hear from you. If you have a question about what's going on in the Supreme Court, if you have a question about the decision in Bush v. Gore, you know, I got my start on the radio really describing the opinion Bush v. Gore. I guess what I'm known for. I actually wrote the brief for the Congressional Black Caucus challenging the Florida electors. So if you got questions about why this guy is president today, or what you feel about Scalia, or what most concerns you about the Supreme Court, dial in. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. I hope that wasn't too that discussion wasn't too highfalutin for you. I don't think so. I think that every American should have a basic understanding of what the Constitution is about. You should know your rights. You should know what it is that you can do and what you can't do. And we shouldn't let people like Scalia go around and start changing what the Constitution is about. Because what you'll find is that really the right wing has been more activist, I think, than anyone on the Warren Court, than anyone on the Supreme Court back when liberals had a majority. You should know, if you don't, that 7 of the 9 justices are Republicans. Only 2 are Democrats. They have a majority, and they do control the agenda. And there's all kinds of examples which lawyers realize. You have the Supreme Court saying things that even they don't believe. The main thing about Gore v. Bush, the thing that I guess most surprised me, was that sometimes when you have a judicial opinion, you can rule one way, you can rule the other way. You know, the laws are often ambiguous. But in the Supreme Court decision of Bush v. Gore, everyone knew that that opinion was, how do I put this gently, trash, junk, crap, whatever word you want to use. That opinion was illogical. It made no sense on its own terms. And even Justice Sandra Day O'Connor's clerk wrote me saying that he agreed with my interpretation of the opinion and that his boss was a hypocrite. Now, it's very rare that a clerk will do that, will turn on their boss, but everyone understood. I mean, the Supreme Court had actually rejected the argument that Bush put before them 3 weeks earlier and then accepted it later. And I want to talk about the opinion. I think it's important for all Americans to understand the opinion because it's never happened in American history that you've had the Supreme Court choose the President of the United States. And it's important, I think, to say the emperor has no clothes, to look and see that, this is just made up. It's made up out of whole cloth. It has no relation to the Constitution or to law. And that I'm not just saying this, but that even conservative law professors will agree. In fact, I invite you to ask your conservative friend who's a lawyer. May be hard to find a lawyer who is a conservative, but there are several there. There's certainly a lot in Washington. And ask them whether they agree with the logic of the decision. Don't ask them whether they're glad Bush is president. Most conservatives are. Ask them if they agree with the logic of the Supreme Court decision. And I think you'll find that it's virtually impossible to defend. And I want to talk about that. And I want to talk about other problems and concerns with Justice Scalia. And I want to take your calls right after the break. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. We appreciate your calls. 877-57-SCOOP. And we'll be back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
Greenspan was a medical doctor, he'd be considered a dangerous quack, and his license to practice would have been yanked long ago. Instead, he's an economist, the unelected head of America's monetary system, and his quackery is not only tolerated but lauded by the powers that be, who've been using him to bilk the middle class. Greenspan's trail of quackery begins back in 1983. When he chaired a commission that persuaded Congress to raise the Social Security taxes of working folks. This radical surgery was necessary, Allen said, to create a surplus to assure that future retirees would get the benefits they're due. Quack. But instead of locking these surpluses away for future retirees, Greenspan left them open to raids by any president needing a quick pile of cash for a pet political project. The latest to make the raid is George W., who dove headfirst into our Social Security surplus to pull out the billions he needed to pay for his tax giveaways to the rich. Greenspan himself told Congress that such tax cuts were necessary to, believe it or not, prevent the buildup of government surpluses. Even though the bulk of the tax giveaways went to the richest people, Greenspan promised that this would not harm working families counting on their Social Security benefits for their retirement. Quack, quack. Just recently, the quack was back, urgently telling Congress that because of out-of-control budget deficits, Congress must now slash Social Security payouts as soon as possible. He urged that every retiree's benefits be cut and that the retirement age be raised. Quack, quack, quack. In his 20 years of practicing economic voodoo, here's what the mad doctor has achieved. Working people had their Social Security taxes raised so rich people could have their income taxes slashed, which he now says means that working people must have their Social Security payments cut. This is Jim Hightower saying, this quack has done enough harm. It's time to yank his license.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. This is your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about how do you solve a problem like Scalia. We're talking about what the Supreme Court is up to, and specifically what our biggest mouth justice is up to, and how and why he rules the way he does. And I'm giving some of my own personal examples. If you want to call in and join in, give your own personal examples, ask questions, find out, tell me what you really are concerned about. What scares you about Justice Scalia? Is it women's freedom? Is it civil rights? Is it, the way that corporations get all the power? What is it? The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. You can also email me at Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. One of the things that Scalia has gotten a lot of criticism for in the last few months is his refusal to recuse himself from the case brought by Judicial Watch and brought by the Sierra Club challenging the Energy Commission of Vice President Dick Cheney. The challenge is simply this. They're not even asking to turn over documents. They're simply asking to know whether the people who participated in that commission were public or private. Now, Cheney insists that they were all government employees. And since they were all government employees, everything's protected by executive privilege. Well, Judicial Watch and Sierra Club say, well, you know what? Vice President Cheney, you're not always the most truthful guy. You've told some things in the past, like Saddam Hussein has nuclear weapons and they're going to greet us as liberators and all this kind of stuff that didn't turn out to be true. So we just want to check that they really are all private. And they're relying on a case that you may not know about. In 1993, Hillary Clinton had a health care task force. That you probably remember. But what you may not remember is that she also argued that disclosure should be protected under federal law. But the courts held otherwise. They said that Hillary Clinton's decision to include a few private people on the health care task force meant that its deliberations had to be open to the public. Okay, at the time, the precedent was unclear. The court ruled against Hillary Clinton. Now, the Republicans, now that they're in charge, they want the court to overrule the Clinton precedent. It's really very clear. When a Democrat is in power, then we all believe in full disclosure. Then you can't have stuff behind closed door. But when a Republican's in power, overturn that precedent. I suppose if John Kerry becomes president, they'll ask that the president be overturned one more time so that he can't do anything in secret. And really, whether you take the issue that it should be held in secret or not, I happen to strongly believe in open government. But clearly it's wrong to say that you shouldn't make this decision based on which party's in power. And I'd like to read from you a quote that a justice, Supreme Court justice, said in 1986. This justice said, "One of the reasons that courts are held in generally high esteem is that they are not in the public consciousness very often." Except on my show. Sorry, that's my own editorial comment. "And one doesn't see that, lo and behold, they're made up of frail human beings like every other governmental institution. Judges ought to make an effort to avoid becoming public figures," this justice wrote in 1986, "because it's not their personalities or their particular viewpoints that they are supposed to be promoting." Let me repeat that. It's not their personalities or their particular viewpoints that they are supposed to be promoting. The name of the justice who wrote that? Justice Antonin Scalia in 1986. But he doesn't seem to follow his own counsel. Doesn't seem to follow it at all. In fact, he argued very strongly that he shouldn't recuse himself, even though he went on Vice President Cheney's private plane to go to the duck hunting. Can you imagine, by the way, if a judge went on the private plane of your opponent to go hunting? How you would think about that, Judge? I'll just, again, I'll give you another example from me as a trial lawyer. Back when I was in California, I practiced mostly in Southern California and Los Angeles courts. But once I went up to Northern California in a case against Apple Computer, and which provides a lot of jobs in Northern California. And right before we got started, the judge said to my opponent, the lawyer on the other side, he called him by his first name and praised him for all the pro bono work he'd done for the local courts. And I knew right then that it didn't matter what I said, I was going to lose that case. And indeed, that was, I think, the first case I ever lost. You know when you're getting home cooked. That's what trial lawyers know. And I think that it's clear we don't have to hear what Justice Scalia thinks of Cheney and the Energy Force. It's clear what he already thinks, because even before the case came before him, as he wrote in his recusal opinion, This is, again, Scalia writing. There is nothing illegal or immoral about making energy industry executives member of a task force on energy. Some people probably think it would be a good idea. Justice Scalia is just not getting it, is he? The question is not whether it's a good idea. The question is whether it should be disclosed to the public. But he's clearly indicating, even before he's read the briefs, even before he's heard the case, that he thinks it's a good idea. And so it's very interesting that even in his recusal, he's showing what a horrible, unfair justice he is. Let me take some of your calls, and then I'll get back to my Scalia stories. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. What's your first name and where are you from?
I'm Ed from New York.
Hi, Ed from New York.
Mark, first I want to comment. I like the lyrics of your song, but I could do without the singing.
Yeah, well, okay, that'll probably be the last time. Fair enough.
But I would like to see your lyrics again, but may I suggest that the next time, if you could find a singer, I'd appreciate it.
Fair enough, Ed. Fair enough.
All right, but I want to talk about Justice Scalia for a second. Justice Scalia recently had the oral argument on the issue of the Cheney thing.
Right.
And during that oral argument, Justice Scalia asked questions both ways. He asked questions of the government, Mr. Olson, and he asked questions for the attorneys for the. I think it's the
Sierra Club and Judicial Watch.
That's correct. And he tried to set boundaries. Now, my question to you is, do you think that Justice Scalia is inherently bigoted and so strong in his opinions that this was just a sham on his part?
I guess I wouldn't use the word bigoted. I would use the word biased. It's clear from, in fact, his recusal opinion that he's already made up his mind on this. He's like I said, as I quoted from his opinion on the recusal, where he says it's probably there's nothing illegal or moral about making energy industry executives member of a task force on energy. Some people probably think it would be a good idea. He's already stated his view. When I've seen Scalia, and I've seen a number of oral arguments, it's always clear to me what side Scalia is on at the time he asks his questions, because when he asks very strong, biting, difficult questions, which a justice has the right to do, of the people that disagree with him, and then when he gets to the side that agrees with him, he offers up these softball questions that that really anyone could answer. I remember in the case of Lawrence v. Texas, which was the case, the gay civil rights case about the two men that were arrested in Texas, the person arguing for gay civil rights was really having a much easier time of it than the lawyer representing the state of Texas arguing that these people should be in prison. And so Scalia would keep asking, well, isn't it true that this and isn't it true that that, and really trying to help out the guy who really wasn't making a very good argument. So I guess the answer is I think at least in every case I've seen or heard, Justice Scalia, he's made up his mind prior to oral argument, and his whole purpose really is to help one lawyer or to hurt another lawyer. But thanks very much for your call. Let me go to another caller. Caller, you're on the air. What's your first name and where are you from?
This is Bert from Minnesota.
Hi, Bert from Minnesota. How are you?
Good, thanks. My question to you is, you haven't answered the title of your broadcast.
Oh, how
what
do you solve
do
a problem?
You do with a problem like Scalia? I mean,
all right. That's a good point. It's a fair point. I asked a question, how do I solve a problem like Scalia? And I owe you an answer. Well, constitutionally, as we know, there's only one way to remove a Supreme Court justice from the bench. As I say at the end of my song, how do you get a Supreme Court justice canned? There is only one way. And that way is impeachment. You can bring charges. Interestingly enough, most scholars, constitutional scholars, will teach you, that to impeach a judge makes far more sense than to impeach, say, a president of the United States. And the reason is quite simple. A president of the United States, after every 4 years, you get a chance to throw him out or get somebody else. I should say him or her out. We haven't had a female president yet. One day I hope I can say him or her out. But for now, you get that every 4 years. So most constitutional scholars believe and indeed argued during the Clinton impeachment that you really shouldn't impeach a president or someone like that unless it's truly a high crime and misdemeanor, truly something really, really harsh. But
sort of selling a policy for future votes sort of thing.
Well, yeah, or maybe lying to get Americans into war. I don't know. Maybe that may be enough. Or
just for a mundane example.
Just to give a random example out there. or maybe because you don't tell the truth about your sex life, in which case we could impeach virtually every member of Congress. But in any case, you can impeach a Supreme Court justice. Let's be clear. What's that?
It's certainly not Supreme Court. I mean, I'm not aware of any impeachments. But I mean,
yes, there is one. There is one. Samuel Chase, back in the, I believe it was the early 1800s, was impeached by the House, and I'm not sure whether he was convicted or not. So there has been at least one case of a Supreme Court justice actually being impeached. And there's actually some 13 judges that have been thrown off the court over the ages. So it has happened in the past. I want to be clear. I certainly know that this Congress will not impeach Justice Scalia for the simple reason that it's a Republican Congress. You can't even get articles of impeachment through the House Judiciary Committee, because to do so would be you need the majority party. And, the majority party obviously is not going – it's the Republican Party. They're not going to impeach Scalia. But I do – well, the other way, of course, to solve a problem like Scalia is to appoint other justices. I mean, that's really the way you work within the system. And the only way to do that, of course, is to elect John Kerry president. George Bush has said that he wants to appoint more justices in the Scalia or Thomas mode. And so it's very scary. By voting for George Bush, you in effect are voting for Antonin Scalia. So while I do think not only that he could be impeached, but that he should be impeached for Gore v. Bush, by the way, I mean, not for his arrogance and not for failing to recuse himself, but for really going around the Constitution and making up law and installing his guy as president. And by the way, I want to be clear here. This is not a case of Justice Scalia either stupidly believing that that Bush was right. Justice Scalia is not a stupid man. He's not. I dislike him, his policies, clearly, but he's a very intelligent man. So, you know, maybe I could think of another justice who maybe blindly follows others. I'm talking about Justice Thomas. I think that's clear. But certainly Justice Scalia knows better and purposely rendered that decision. And when he says that to count the votes casts a cloud on legitimacy of the guy I want to be president. He didn't say the guy I want to be president, but cast a cloud on legitimacy of Bush's claim to be president. To me, that's as worthy of anything that a Stalinist court might have said. So to answer your question, Bert, there are two ways. You can either impeach Scalia or you can appoint other justices and hopefully diminish his influence. And the only way to do that, of course, is to elect a Democratic president. Mm-hmm. But thanks very much for your call. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
We got to go to one more commercial break, but if you want to call in, the number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, and I'm going to come back with another story, another personal story of my encounter with Justice Scalia, and it has to do with religious freedom. And it may surprise you that I was on the side of religious freedom, and Scalia was arguing against it. Back with my personal story when I'm trying to solve a problem like Scalia right after this.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Yet another attempt is underway in Congress to stiffen the penalties for those who willingly flaunt workplace safety standards, which lead to the death of someone on the job. An average of 100 people are killed at work every year due to the willful neglect of safety rules. But those responsible can only be punished with 6 months in jail and a fine. A new bill has been introduced in the Senate which would increase that punishment to a 10-year prison sentence. But don't hold your breath. Similar legislation was introduced on Capitol Hill last year and went nowhere.
After a 2-year struggle for a union, bulletproof vest makers at Point Blank Body Armor in South Florida finally have a contract with the United Needle Industries and Textile Employees Union. The 150 mostly Latino and Haitian workers suffered under horrendous working conditions, poor pay, and inadequate benefits. When the workers demanded management recognize their union, the leaders were fired and a bitter strike ensued. After a massive pressure campaign, including rallies and pickets, a federal judge ordered an injunction of Point Blank, forcing the company to rehire workers who had been illegally fired for union activity. Point Blank agreed there would not have to be a union election, and shortly thereafter, the majority of employees signed union authorization cards. Harris Rayner is the Southern Regional Director for Unite.
And within basically a 36-hour period, we had our union, we had our contract, the workers had their first guaranteed raises, all the standard clauses for arbitration of grievances, and created a retirement plan for the workers.
South Korea's new labor-oriented political party is beginning to have some effects on the relationship between unions and Korean companies less than a month after its debut, in part due to the surprising victory of the Korean Democratic Labor Party, which took 10 seats in the National Assembly. Tiremaker Kumho today settled the dispute with its union over the status of long-term temporary workers. According to the agreement, any temporary worker who's been with Kumho Tires longer than 2 years will become a full-time employee immediately. The rest qualify for permanent status at the end of next year. The practice of long-term temping is very common in South Korea, and it's hoped this deal sets a trend to break that cycle. Here's today's Daobab report. What began as legislation designed to bring the United States into compliance with the World Trade Organization has turned into a free-for-all on Capitol Hill. A bill to phase out about $5 billion worth of subsidies for exporting U.S. goods now includes more than $170 billion in tax cuts for a variety of industries, including some $37 billion in tax relief targeted for companies with offshore subsidiaries. Opponents of the bill worry that may provide an incentive to send more jobs out of the country.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're discussing today, how do you solve a problem like Scalia? It's not an easy problem to solve. You can call me if you like, 877-57-SCOOP, or send me an email to Mark, M-A-R-K, at radioinsidescoop.com. I got an email from Gordon, Michigan, asked whether can't a Supreme Court justice be diagnosed with medical condition, such as Alzheimer's disease or syphilis or other mental conditions? How about insanity? My gut feeling is no, and I see that as a failing of our system, as well as the security function to protect a justice's tenure. Well, Gordon, I actually was looking up during the commercial break in my pocket constitution because I had said before the break that the standards were different for impeachment of a justice and impeachment of the president, and I wanted to give support for that in the Constitution. The president is impeached for high crimes and misdemeanors. But judges, it says under Article 3 of our Constitution, that judges both of the supreme and inferior courts shall hold their offices during good behavior. Now, that's not in the presidential impeachment. So again, presidents, just high crimes and misdemeanors. But judges have to show good behavior. And I would think that if we had Alzheimer's or other mental conditions, that would not be good behavior. It also suggests that, again, the standard is less for that of impeachment. And again, my standard comes right from the Constitution. I am a strict constructionist, unlike Justice Scalia. I believe in the text of this document, the sacred document of our country. And so, yes, absolutely, it's easier to impeach a judge than for the President of the United States. Let me go to a call. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine. What's your first name and where are you from?
Oh, I'm Gordon from Michigan. You just answered my question.
I just read your email, Gordon.
But I'm willing to express my diagnosis for Scalia.
Go right ahead.
And send it up to the powers that be.
Okay, go right ahead.
And I think, well, he might have some type of disorder, but I see that also as a danger because say we have a preponderance of Republicans in Congress, they could try to float diagnoses against left-wing justices and try to expel them from service.
That's true.
And, it's a double-edged sword.
That's true. No, it's a good point. And that's why, actually, I think the best way to get rid of Scalia is to marginalize him by electing John Kerry as president. And I do think impeachment can be overused. My only point was that impeachment of a president should be far rarer than impeachment of a Supreme Court justice. But your point's a good one, and I agree with you, Gordon, that this is a double-edged sword. It can be used against us, and that's why the best way to get rid of Scalia, to solve a problem like Scalia, as my terrible song put it, is to elect John Kerry and to have him nominate judges
I think you're right. I think the means is inherent to the end, and we should be honorable in our means.
Fair enough. Thanks very much for your call, Gordon.
Thank you.
I got another email from Ron in Lake Worth, Florida. who says that my first Scalia story was great. Bring on some more, and no, it wasn't too technical. I think that most of us will listen, that listen to you have probably spent a lot of time looking at the Constitution. Well, I hope you're right, Ron, and therefore I'm going to venture out and give my second personal Scalia story. I only have two where I've confronted him personally. But it was after that speech, he was talking with a group of students, and me and my big mouth, I figured if I took on Scalia once, I could do it again. And what had just come out at this time was a famous case called the peyote case. Native Americans have used the drug peyote, which is kind of it's an hallucinogen. I don't know the details of it. I'm not a doctor, but it's kind of a low-level hallucinogenic drug. But Native Americans have been using peyote in religious ceremonies for hundreds and thousands of years. And no one disputes that this is a religious use, that they're not just doing it to get high, that this is indeed a spiritual ceremony that again has been around hundreds of years before white men and women ever came to our shores. And Justice Scalia held in an opinion that the First Amendment, which says Congress shall not prohibit the free exercise of religion, didn't help the Native Americans. He said, look, as long as we have a neutral principle, in other words, we have a drug law that says that no one could use drugs, as long as it's not out to get the religion, as long as it's not purposely made to get the religion, if it's a neutral principle, you can ban it, even if it has a religious purpose. So, sorry, Native Americans, we know you've used peyote for hundreds and thousands of years, but we say no drugs, you lose. And to some extent, and I got to give Scalia credit, to some extent he's right, because after all there has to be a limit. You could have a religion that throws virgins into pits and kills them, and obviously we're going to say that murder is wrong even if it's in your religion. So I agree that that's something to be considered and that it ought to be a balancing test. But I wasn't willing to just cavalierly write off, as Scalia did, oh, well, it's a neutral principle, therefore religion goes by the wayside. Again, I think it's interesting that a person who seems so anxious to keep religion in our public space, who insists that under God be under the Constitution, even though Scalia was already basically saying it has no meaning, he was arguing that in the under God case, that under God doesn't really mean under God. It just means kind of like anyway. But going back to my story, so Scalia's point was neutral principles always trump religion. And Scalia loves these bright line tests. He doesn't like anything ambiguous. Neutral principles always trump religion. So I said, okay, Justice Scalia. And he was surrounded by about 10 students. And I said, Justice Scalia, if neutral principles always trump religion, then I'm sure you would agree that if Congress were to pass a law that the Catholic Church could not discriminate against women as priests, then, of course, that would be a neutral principle, because we would pass a law that says that no one can discriminate against women. It won't be directed at the Catholic Church. But if Congress passes a law like Title VII that says no one can discriminate against women, clearly that would apply to the Catholic Church, and they'd have to have women priests, right? And he said, well, Title VII, that's, of course, the non-discrimination law, that exempts religion. I said, I know it does, but that wasn't my question, sir. My question, Justice Scalia, was if they didn't exempt religion, if they passed a law with neutral principles that didn't take account of religion and simply said you cannot have discrimination anywhere in America, that, of course, would require the Catholic Church to have women priests, right? There was a long pause, and then he said, I'll have to get back to you on this one. And people laughed. And I said, well, I'd like you to get back to me, and here's my email address. And he said, I'll get back to you. Needless to say, he never got back to me. And I don't know whether it's Justice Scalia hadn't thought through his own argument. I like to think that's not the case. I think that he's actually an intelligent man. I think it's just the case of that when it comes to the Catholic Church, suddenly his principles fall by the wayside. Suddenly his grand principles don't hold. Just like Justice Scalia had said very clearly that equal protection, that to have equal protection, it requires intent. And I'm explaining this all in 1 minute. I'm going to try to. Basically, there was a case, the death penalty case, that was brought up, where it was shown, beyond any doubt, statistics clearly show that if you kill a white person in America, you're far more likely to get the chair than if you kill a black person in America. And the statistics are overwhelming. And Scalia said, well, no matter what the statistics say, you have to prove intent. You have to show there's an intent to discriminate. Otherwise, the Equal Protection Clause has no meaning. Okay, that's your view. Fine, let's take Bush v. Gore. In Bush v. Gore, the problem was not that The state had counted votes all kinds of different ways in a million different, you know, not a million, but 10 different systems throughout Florida. The problem was not that Florida wanted to count its own votes. The problem, according to Scalia, was that there were some people who may have counted some votes in a slightly different standard from the way others counted some votes, trying to do their best to rely on the intent of the voter. And Scalia said, well, in this case, you don't need intent. In this case, equal protection matters, even though it's you know, a few hundred votes at best that make the difference, while he's throwing out 150,000 votes that aren't counted. Scalia said, nope, our equal protection jurisprudence doesn't apply here. You cannot cite this case as precedent, he said. And that, my friends, was indeed unprecedented. If you want to know more about the Bush v. Gore decision, I mean, that's after all how I got started in the radio business, go to RadioInsideScoop.com. That's my website. Click on articles and check out the Bush v. Gore article there. It explains the decision in layman's terms. That was my goal. And if you have an idea of something else that should be on the Inside Scoop, give me an email to Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. I'm happy to do your topics. This show is for you. And in fact, in an effort to make my website more compatible, I think you're going to see some major changes next week. It's going to be a much better website, and I hope you'll tune in. My next show, of course, is this Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, where the subject is Don't Think You're in America. I hope that you'll tune in on Sunday. This is Mark Levine signing off on the Inside Scoop.